Pauling looked at Jared and smiled.
"Beloved,"
she said, and flung the sling to him as the first of the bullets struck her body. Jared reached as she danced on her line, moved by the force of the projectiles that overwhelmed the defenses of her unitard and tore into her legs, torso, back, and skull. He caught the sling as she fell and pulled it from the hole as she found its bottom. He felt the last second of her life, and then it was gone. He was screaming as they pulled him into the transport. The Enishon culture is both matriarchal and tribal, as befits a race whose far distant ancestors were hive-dwelling insect-like creatures. The hierarch comes to power through the vote of the matriarchs of the major Enishon tribes. This makes the process sound rather more civilized than it is, since the vote-gathering process can involve years of unspeakably violent civil war as the tribes battle to make their own matriarch ascendant. To avoid massive unrest at the end of every hierarch's reign, once a hierarch is chosen, the position becomes hereditary, and aggressively so. A hierarch must produce and consecrate a viable heir within 2 Enishon years of assuming the mantle, thus assuring an orderly transfer of power for the future, or have the hierarchical rule of her tribe end with her reign. Enishon matriarchs, fed hormonally dense royal jellies that produce sweeping changes in their bodies, another artifact of their ancestry, are fertile lifelong. The ability to produce an heir was rarely an issue. What would become an issue was from which tribe to choose the father. Matriarchs do not marry for love. Strictly speaking, Enishons don't marry at all, so political considerations would now come into play. The tribes unable to achieve hierarchy now competed on a much subtler and usually less violent level to produce a consort, with the reward being social advantages for the tribe directly and the ability to influence hierarchical policies as part of the dowry provided the consortial tribe. Hierarchs from newly ascendant tribes traditionally took their consort either from their tribe's greatest ally, as a reward for service, or from the tribe of their greatest enemy, if the hierarchical vote had been particularly messy, and there was a perception that the entire Enishon nation needed to be cobbled back together. Hierarchs from established lines, on the other hand, had far greater leeway in choosing their consorts. Phileb Ser was the 6th hierarch in the current Ser line. The tribe had held the hierarchy 3 times previous over the last several hundred Enishon years. Upon ascending, she chose her consort from the Heo tribe, a tribe whose expansionist colonial ambitions eventually led to the decision to ally in secret with the Array and the Oban in order to attack human space. For its primary role in the war, Enishon would come away with some of the Colonial Union's prime real estate, including the Colonial Union home planet of Phoenix. The Array would come away with somewhat fewer planets, but would get Coral, the planet that was the site of their recent humiliation by the Colonial Union. The Oban, cryptic to the last, offered to contribute forces only slightly less expansive than the Enishons, but asked only for a single planet, the overpopulated and resource-stripped Earth, which was in such apparent poor repair that the Colonial Union had it under quarantine. Both the Enishons and the Array were happy to cede the planet. Hierarchical policy, prompted by the Heo, inclined the Enishon to plan a war with the humans. But although united by hierarchical rule, each Enishon tribe kept its own council. At least one tribe, the Gelm, strongly opposed attacking the Colonial Union, since humans were reasonably strong, distressingly tenacious, and not especially principled when they felt threatened. The Gelm felt that the Array would have been a far better target, given that race's long-standing enmity with the Enishons and its weak military state after being crushed by the humans at Coral. Hierarch Phileb Ser chose to ignore the Gelm's counsel in this matter, but, noting the tribe's apparent fondness for humanity, selected one of the Gelm's tribal counselors, Hugh Gelm, as Enishon's ambassador to the Colonial Union. Hugh Gelm, recently recalled to Enishon to witness the consecration of the heir and to celebrate the Chaffalon with the Hierarch. Hugh Gelm, who was with the Hierarch when the 2nd platoon attacked, and who was with her now, in hiding, as she was hailed by the humans who had murdered her consort and stolen her heir. "They've stopped firing at us," Alex Rentkin said. "Looks like they've figured out we have the heir."
"Good," Sagan said.
Pauling and Einstein were dead, but she had other soldiers stuck in the palace, and she wanted to get them out. She signaled them to make their way to the transport. She winced as Daniel Harvey tended to her shoulder. Her unitard blocked the first hit completely, but the second managed to get through and did some real damage. For now, her right arm was entirely useless. She motioned with her left hand to the small gurney in the middle of the transport, where the wriggling form of Viut Ser, heir to the Hierarch, lay securely strapped in. The heir no longer screamed, but mewled, her fear tempered by exhaustion.
"Someone needs to give her the shot," Sagan said.
"I'll do it," Jared said,
stood before anyone else could volunteer, and retrieved the long needle stored in a medical kit below Sagan's transport seat. He turned and stood over Viut Ser, hating the thing. An overlay popped into his vision, via his brain pal, showing him where to insert the needle and how far to push into the heir's guts to deliver what was inside the syringe. Jared jabbed the needle savagely into Viut Ser, who screamed horribly at the invasion of the cold metal. Jared pressed the button on the syringe that shot half the contents into one of the heir's two immature reproductive sacs. Jared extracted the needle and plunged it into Viut Ser's second reproductive sac, emptying the syringe. Inside the sacs, nanobots coated the interior walls and then burned, searing the tissues dead, rendering their owner irreversibly sterile. Viut Ser wailed in confusion and pain.
"I've got the Hierarch on the line," Rentkin said.
"Audio and video. Pipe her into the general feed," Sagan said. "And Alex, stand by the gurney. You get to be the camera." Rentkin nodded and stood in front of the gurney. Fixing on Sagan and allowing the audio and visual feeds to his brain pal from his ears and eyes to serve as microphone and camera.
"Piping in now," Rentkin said.
In Jared's field of vision, and in the field of vision of everyone in the transport, the Hierarch of Enisha appeared. Even without knowing the map of Enishan expressions, it was clear the Hierarch was incandescent with rage.
"You fucking piece of human shit!"
the Hierarch said, or the translation said, eschewing a literal translation for something that expressed the intent behind the words.
"You have 30 seconds to give me my daughter, or I will declare war on every last one of your worlds. I swear to you I will reduce them to rubble."
"Shut up," Sagan said, the translation coming from her belt speaker. From the other end of the line came multiple loud clacks, indicating absolute shock from the Hierarch's court. It was simply inconceivable someone would speak to her that way.
"I beg your pardon,"
the Hierarch said, eventually, shocked herself.
"I said shut up," Sagan said. "If you are smart, you will listen to what I have to say to you and spare both our peoples needless suffering.
Hierarch, you won't declare war on the Colonial Union here because you've already declared war on us. You, the RA, and the Oban."
"I don't have the slightest—"
the Hierarch began. "Lie to me again and I'll cut off your daughter's head," Sagan said. More clacks. The Hierarch shut up.
"Now," Sagan said,
"are you at war with the Colonial Union?"
"Yes,"
the Hierarch said, after a long moment.
"Or will be, presently."
"I think not," Sagan said.
"Who are you?"
the Hierarch said.
"Where is Ambassador Hartling? Why am I negotiating with someone who is threatening to kill my child?"
"I imagine Ambassador Hartling is in her office right now, trying to figure out what's going on," Sagan said. "As you did not feel the need to enlighten her concerning your military plans, neither did we. You are negotiating with the person who has threatened to kill your child because you have threatened to kill our children, Hierarch. And you are negotiating with me because at the moment, I am the negotiator you deserve. And you can be assured on this matter you will not be able to negotiate with the Colonial Union again." The Hierarch fell silent again.
"Show me my daughter,"
she said, when she spoke again. Sagan nodded to Rentkin, who turned and showed Wiltzer, who had once again downshifted into whimpering. Jared saw the reaction of the hierarch, who was reduced from the leader of a world to merely a mother, feeling the pain and fear of her own child.
"What are your demands?"
the hierarch said, simply. "Call off your war," Sagan said.
"There are two other parties," the hierarch said. "If we back out, they will want to know why."
"Then continue preparing for war," Sagan said. "And then attack one of your allies instead. I would suggest the RA. They are weak, and you could take them by surprise."
"And what of the Oban?" the hierarch said.
"We'll deal with the Oban," Sagan said.
"Will you now?"
the hierarch said, clearly skeptical.
"Yes," Sagan said. "Are you suggesting we can simply hide what happened here tonight?"
the hierarch said.
"The beams you used to destroy my palace could be seen for 100 miles.
"Don't hide it. Investigate it," Sagan said.
"The Colonial Union will gladly help our Anishan friends in their investigation. And when it's discovered the Array are behind it, you'll have your rationale for war."
"Your other demands?" the hierarch said.
"There is a human named Charles Boutin," Sagan said. "We know he's helping you. We want him."
"We don't have him," the hierarch said. "The Oban do. You can ask them for him for all I care."
"Your other demands?"
"We want assurances that you will call off your war," Sagan said.
"You want a treaty?"
the hierarch asked.
"No," Sagan said. "We want a new consort, one of our choosing."
This generated the loudest clack of all from the court.
"You murder my consort, and then you demand to pick the next one?"
the hierarch said.
"Yes," Sagan said. "To what end?"
the hierarch implored.
"My Viut has been consecrated. She is the legal heir. If I meet your demands and you let my daughter go, she is still of the Hio clan, and by our traditions they will still have political influence. You would have to kill my daughter to break their influence."
The hierarch paused brokenly, then continued.
"And if you do that, why would I fulfill any of your demands?"
"Hierarch," Sagan said, "your daughter is sterile." Silence.
"You didn't,"
the hierarch said, pleading.
"We did," Sagan said.
The hierarch rubbed her mouthpieces together, creating an unworldly keening noise. She was crying. She got up from her seat, out of frame, keening, and then suddenly reappeared, too close to the camera.
"You are monsters!"
the hierarch screamed. Sagan said nothing. The consecration of the heir cannot be undone. A sterile heir means the death of a hierarchical line. The death of a hierarchical line means years of unyielding and bloody civil war as tribes compete to found a new line. If the tribes knew an heir was sterile, they would not wait for the natural span of the heir's life to begin their internecine warfare. First, the sitting hierarch would be assassinated to bring the sterile heir to power. Then she would be a constant assassination target as well. When power is within reach, few will wait patiently for it. By making Wiltzer sterile, the Colonial Union had sentenced the Ser hierarchical line to oblivion and the Anisha to anarchy. Unless the hierarch gave in to their demands and consented to something unspeakable. And the hierarch knew it. She fought it anyway.
"I will not allow you to choose my consort," the hierarch said.
"We will inform the matriarchs your daughter is sterile," Sagan said.
"I will destroy your transport where it sits and my daughter with you,"
the hierarch screamed.
"Do it," Sagan said.
"And all the matriarchs will know that your incompetence as hierarch led us to attack you and caused the death of your consort and your heir. And then you may find that while you may choose a tribe to provide you with a consort, the tribe itself may not agree to provide one. No consort, no heir. No heir, no peace. We know Anishan history, hierarch. We know the tribes have withheld consorts for less, and that those boycotted hierarchs didn't last long after that."
"It won't happen,"
the hierarch said. Sagan shrugged.
"Kill us then," she said.
or refuse our demands, and we'll give you back your sterile daughter. Or do it our way, and have our cooperation in extending your hierarchical line and keeping your nation from civil war. These are your choices.